Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate with some crippling fear, constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. My name is Chris Parker Howard, and I'm going to be honest, today I'm struggling a little bit. Today was rough. I don't know why. There are some days where you just wake up and it's hard. That's the strange thing about this whole situation, isn't it? It's like you can have nothing happen to you, and you just feel such an immense sadness in your heart, and it feels so real. The only thing that makes sense is to just cut it out. You know what I mean? I mean, it's the weirdest thing. Now, obviously, when these kinds of things hit, you can be pretty sure that you're wrong. I mean, it stands to reason that you're wrong. Especially after everything that you've been through up to this point. I mean, this is not the first time this has happened to you. If you're a depressed person, this is a thing that happens to you all the time. And so just the very act of waking up and existing feels like a betrayal. Man, it's rough. But, you know, the thing that I've started to really do in cases like this is I start to give myself the word now. I like to use the word now because now is a connection to the current moment. It's like snapping your fingers and really living in the space and time and pain that you're feeling in this given moment and checking in with it and seeing where is this coming from? Is this coming from some chemicals that didn't get the fucking memo to take the day off? Or is this coming from somewhere else? And today for me, it's a mixed bag, obviously, the world we're living in at the moment. But the world is going to do what the world is going to do, just like it always has. And the real question is, who am I going to show up as? Who am I going to be? When the world is a dumpster fire and nothing here makes sense, who am I going to be? And I'm not in control of what happens all the time. And I'm not in control of all of these chemicals all the time. And sometimes it doesn't even feel like I'm in control of much of anything, but one of the things that you can try to teach yourself to control is what you're going to do when your head gets hijacked by these very real emotions. That were triggered by nothing. So you pull your socks up and you try. And one of the best ways to try, especially when you're feeling outside of your own boundaries, is to check in with a friend. Maybe a family member. Maybe a priest or a doctor. Anybody, really. Call a crisis line. And as much as I love you here, and I do love you here, this is not a replacement for therapy. This is more like getting caught in an elevator for an hour with a stripping clown. There's something kind of funny about it, but there's also something kind of sad about it. Mostly because you work in that office too. So I don't know. There's some bonding that can happen. In this instance, I'm the clown, by the way. I would be remiss if I did not mention that you can come see me face-to-face in my other clown outfit playing drums for the rock and roll band Decatur at the Underground Music Festival, taking place in Denver, Colorado, Friday, July 27th through Sunday, July 29th. Four outdoor stages, 20 venues. And if you use the promo code Decatur, you get $25 off your weekend pass. And it lets them know that we sent you. So if you were planning to go anyway, why not get some money off? Come see my band. Today on the show is Jason Morissette. He is an independent filmmaker who decided, along with some friends back in Michigan in the summer of 2005, that he was going to fulfill his dream of making a zombie movie. And more than a decade later, it is now available on Amazon. And I gotta tell you, this was a really fun throwback kind of horror flick. They did a really good job putting it together. They put every ounce of their budget into the effects, and they wisely edited around some of the stiffer acting, and they really stepped it up with trying to write a really good story to boot. So I think it really holds up. You should go check it out if you're a fan of that kind of thing. But more importantly than that, Jason is just a really interesting, quirky, funny, solid dude, and I think you're going to like talking to him. And, you know, maybe listening to this episode, I'll feel like I talked to somebody today, too, because, man, it's a rough one. I'm going to call a friend. I'm going to check in, make myself present with some people today. Let's talk to Jason Morissette.
Well, the nice thing about OCD is the humor in it. As far as mental illnesses go, so it can be very silly.
Yeah? Like what?
I can look like I'm doing weird dances or something, just having the way I have to touch things or do weird things. Very visually speaking, it can be. It's a goofy kind of thing.
Is that a thing? Like the need to touch things or like, do you have a thing with numbers or is it all tactile?
I do have some. No, I have it's everything under the sun almost. There's all kinds of OCDs, and everyone, you know, obviously has different kinds of OCDs, but
yeah,
there's touching things I do. There's ticks I do. There are numbers. I have certain numbers I have to have things fall on, pumping the gas or different things.
Right.
Bad numbers, good numbers, kind of a lot of different things.
Is that so? Like if you're pumping the gas and it lands on a bad number, like what do you do? Like what does that look like to you? Is that a thing where like you'll feel it?
Yes. I'll feel it in my chest. So I'll continue on until I get one of my good numbers.
Do they have to be round or is it something else?
No, nothing round. Four and sevens are my good numbers.
Uh-huh.
Eights and nines are my bad numbers. The rest are neutral.
Okay.
So, and of course, eight and nine together is the worst possible combination. Four and seven together is great. If there's fours and sevens, eights and nines all together, it all cancels each other out. It's
oh, man.
So
something that's 47.89 would, you know, well, I don't care. I'm not buying it.
Well, that is a dilemma I run into. There's a lot of things that are such and such dot 98 cents.
Yeah.
Everything ends on 98 cents. So, you know, that's something I guess I'll have to get it. But I have in the past, though, have found things mislabeled a little bit. If it's 2 cents more, like a mom and pop little, you know, country store,
yeah,
and something will be $1.99, here's one for $2, I will buy that $2 one.
Yeah.
I just feel a lot more peace of mind with that.
Sure.
That 1 more cent added.
So let's take that and find our way into that. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Bay City, Michigan. right in the middle of the state.
So, like, right from there, what did that look like?
It's small town America. Dad worked in a warehouse. Money was often tight growing up when we were young.
Yeah.
That kind of typical Midwestern town and, you know, struggle.
Yeah. Lots of bread and butter and goulash.
Yes, yes. macaroni and cheese from the box.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bare essentials.
So, as far as that's concerned, like, when was the first time that you noticed that you had a thing with numbers and having to count things?
I think numbers was actually kind of a was a later addition. I'm not sure what the first OCD trait that stuck. It's almost like a gum. So you have one piece of gum,
yeah,
and it's almost a flavorless green apple. And then eventually it attracts another piece of gum, and it's a different flavor. This one has some kind of peachiness to it.
Yeah.
And those kind of, you know, roll around for a while, and then more pieces of gum with different flavors are added, almost because they're attracted to these other... Everything sticks.
Yeah.
And so over time, a fluke thing will cause a new thing to tack on, and it may be going from some kind of touching thing to some kind of number thing to, and usually, I think everything stems out of some kind of fear.
Yeah.
And in that, I would say probably the first thing that developed OCD in me was, I have a bit of a hypochondria, side, which I guess OCD and hypochondria, from what I've been told, do coexist very often.
Yeah.
And so I would have certain, I'd feel a lump somewhere when I was a kid, and
yeah,
I'd be like, what's this, Mom? And I would, fortunately, thank God they didn't have WebMD or anything when I was a child, because
yeah,
I probably would have been freaking myself out far more. But I would always be asking my mom weird questions about this or that. I remember, I think it was high school or early college, I was reading about Abraham Lincoln. I have scoliosis, and I have an indentation in my chest that, high school gym class, you know, being shirtless, I'd be like, look at my weird indentation in my chest, and, you know, kids would make fun of it. But
yeah,
I never thought of anything more than like a unfortunate body feature until,
right,
I watched some documentary somewhere about Abraham Lincoln, and he had a syndrome called Marfan syndrome, and he was tall, lanky, scoliosis with an indentation in his chest. And it freaked the hell out of me, because I'm like, that's me. And I remember, it's like, if he wasn't shot, if John Wilkes Booth hadn't shot Abraham Lincoln, he probably would not have lived much longer because of his Marfan syndrome. I'm like, oh no. And so, I got my mom to take me to multiple doctors, all these different.
So mom was on board.
Like, yeah,
we're gonna figure this out.
Yes, yeah, she was. She took me to different doctors. There's different, you know, an eye doctor and a bone doctor, and just different kinds of doctors.
Yeah.
For the different traits that how you identify it, and the first, and they said, no, you don't have it. You don't have it.
Yeah.
So, and then a few years pass, and again, something else I ran into that said it again, and it set it all off again.
Right.
Went to all new doctors.
Right.
What if the first
last
doctor
guy didn't know what the fuck he was talking about?
Exactly. So I went through it all over again. I think that time, I'm sure my parents were not quite, you know, like, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
it's probably best you get it checked out. But, and the more I think about it, I think the first time I had some kind of drawn out medical thing that was nothing, it was fourth or fifth grade, and I woke up in the morning, I had some stomach pains, and I'd like, I don't want to go to school, I don't feel well, and like, okay, you know, you can stay home. And then it would happen every morning, and went into a long, and my mom would take me to different doctors, and like, something's really wrong with him. He's like, you know, he's always complaining in the morning of, you know, stomach aches and stomach pains. You know, what's causing it? You know, everything's fine. Went through all kinds of tests where you drink the chalky liquid and all the, you know, all kinds of different tests. And, you know, nothing was ever found. And, you know, eventually one morning my mom told me, you got to get out there. You're going to school. I was like, Mom, I don't want to go to school. And like, you're going to school. And set me off and, all right. It's just the way my body was. I don't have much of an appetite in the morning.
Yeah.
And it takes a few hours before I feel any kind of hunger. And that's all it was.
Sure.
But my brain back then would try to think of the most nefarious way, the reason why I'd feel that way.
Do you know where any of that came from? Like, was there any sort of outside influence that you can think of with hindsight that leads you to think, you know, come to think of it, you know, I did see Faces of Death, you know, six or whatever.
I don't think so. I think what it eventually comes down to is a fear of what is the worst possible problem. Let's say I've got a symptom, and it's, you know, of course, you look on WebMD, whatever symptom you have is cancer. That's,
yeah,
that's what it comes down to. So if I have a symptom and it's a typical frequent symptom that everybody has from now and again, my brain tells me that's probably nothing to worry about.
Right.
But the fact that I don't know for sure without having tests, that it's not that, you know, 99%, it's just fill in the blank.
See, and that's that obsessive stuff right there. That's the sweet spot. Because it's not just a matter of, you know, having a thing where you can't have dirt on your hands, or you got to tie your shoes, or you got to check the doorknob three times. It's not just that. It extends itself into thoughts and thought patterns, and it can turn into a thing where, once you get something in your head, you're like a dog with a bone. You can't let go of the idea until you find a way to put that idea to peace.
And the only way for medical stuff is get some kind of test that definitively says, no, you do not have this disease.
Unless that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And then you go see somebody else.
Well, see, you're great after you get that test result. You go 6 months, maybe a year. You're feeling great. Then a symptom comes back all of a sudden. And it's like, that doctor was a quack. That's it.
So was that a pretty regular occurrence for you as a kid?
It wasn't that frequent when I was a kid. A few times with the stomach ache problem. I had scoliosis. The Marfan syndrome came out in high school. Then it came out again in college. The older I get, I think the more frequent they happen.
Yeah.
So I'll have, you know, and part of that probably stems from the older you get, the closer to death you get. And
right.
So the likelihood of different diseases increases.
Sure.
So I think that has a certain amount of an effect to increase that. Habit. Of falling into these traps gets a little easier to, you know, to fall. And like, well, everything is going great one day, you know, for weeks, and like, oh, everything's fantastic. I'm feeling great. I haven't had any problems. And then all of a sudden you get one symptom and you're like, maybe not, you know, and usually what will happen will be, I'll be like, great. It's probably nothing, but now my brain's going to dwell on it.
Yeah.
And I almost always know that I'm probably fine. It's the fact that now I know I have to resign myself to worrying about it.
Yeah. But that is also part of the process. There's almost a comfort in it in a way, because if you have a problem and you start to pinpoint what you think it might be, it can be this sort of strange gray area where now you've pinpointed it, so there's relief, but you've pinpointed something that's going to kill you, so there's panic.
Yes.
So it's like, aha, I know what to panic about.
You know, and there is a weird sense of relief sometimes where, you know, I've acknowledged on many occasions, I sometimes feel more peace at mind when I have something to worry about. Because it creates a concrete problem.
It gives you a box to put the trouble in.
And I can focus. Otherwise, I might be stressed out about things, but it's just abstract, something in the air. I don't have anything that I can pin my worries or my focus on. But when I have a symptom of some sort, have a pain in my side, great. I'm going to have appendicitis. Yeah. I've got something I can research it. I can fall into the trap of looking online and comparing different symptoms and what age does this usually happen?
Right.
All the different things, in an odd way, as while I'm in my panic, I'll also start to be more calm that I can have something. I'll be almost in my right state of mind again. It's an odd juxtaposition.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too is that you've got this hypochondria that's essentially a strange thought process that a lot of people have and is really hard to nail down, because how do you tell someone they're not sick or they don't feel well or they do feel well when they say they don't feel well? How do you tell someone that's nothing, that's not a big deal? Because at least somewhere in the back of your mind, you don't really know. And so there's not really a lot for you to be able to differentiate your feeling that there's something wrong from the fact that your thought processes on this are outside the norm of what other people do. Because in real society, you see it all the time where someone is completely healthy, they drop dead of a heart attack. Someone's jogging and they get pancreatic cancer and they find out while they're running. It's one of those things where you actually do see people get sick.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a validation for that out in the real world. It's not like a lot of other things that people can point at, like, you having a move around funny in order to feel comfortable in a space, or touching a doorknob or things like that. So that side of the equation is a lot easier for you to get away with for a lot longer, so it can really dig its roots in.
And those stories where you hear somebody healthy, those are the kicker, because you hear, oh, they were great. They just had a test, they just had their colonoscopy, 6 months before and everything was fine.
Right.
And then they missed it. And then, so those things run through. So I'm like, oh, my test came back good. Oh, maybe I do have something to worry about, because you hear those one-off stories.
Right.
Those are the worst, I think, for hypochondriacs like me. They're good, I think, for people to encourage them to get work done when they hear of somebody super healthy, but they didn't bother to get, checked for something, get them in, For the average person, those are helpful. But for the hypochondriac, those awarenesses. I remember going when I was younger, going in, for an STD clinic, and subjected sitting in the chair listening to all these. And I was not somebody that was at any kind of high risk, but yet the TVs are, scaremongering HIV and everything else. And you're in there for 45 minutes, an hour, subjected to it. And by the end of it, it's, oh my God, I got 6 months to live. And it's for people like me, what's good for the majority is like the worst possible kind of care or prevention.
Well, and were there a lot of other? What was your friend group like when you were coming up? Like, what was your group of people?
I geeky people. I hang out with geeks. The outcasts, the people that were creative interests.
So there could definitely be in a group like that, there probably weren't a lot of there probably weren't a lot of dissenting opinions as far as someone coming to the group with something that was quirky or strange. It was just, that's Jason.
Mm-hmm.
It was not really like, you really had to calm down.
Well, and there is something to that, because I'm a quirky guy. to begin with. I'll do something weird. So that helps mask some of my little quirky hypochondriac or my OCD tendencies. Because a lot of my tendencies come out of the first ones. I don't know if they came out of my hypochondria or just other random fears. My rituals will be I have to touch something four times. If I'm walking by a doorway, I have to touch the side of the door four times, or the walkway, or a table I'm walking by.
Yeah.
If I touch it three times, I got to backtrack and hit it four more times, or whatever current thing I'm stressing, whether it's possible illness, relationship problem, family problem, whatever the current most likely stress thing I have, my worst thoughts will come true if I don't do that.
Huh. I mean, is that an active thought, or is that kind of a passive thought?
It's a constant thought.
Like when you're walking past the table and you tap it three times, do you know as you're walking away that, you know, should have been four? Or is it as you're walking away, you go, that didn't feel right? You know what it was? Needed to be four.
I rarely go walking by something and beforehand know I need to touch it four times. It's usually during the act.
Impulsive.
I'll be impulsively like, oh, and if I hit, maybe if I do touch it four times, but the third time was I barely just grazed it.
Yeah.
Then I got to back up and do it from the beginning again.
Huh.
Otherwise, worst case scenario of whatever I have to worry about this month would happen. Because we all have different worries that we have.
Sure.
In our lives. You know, my OCD just tends to fixate on those and find, and it may be a way that mentally I'm trying to control these uncontrollable things. So if I can, you know, touch doors four times in order to, save, you know, me from having heart disease, then that's me, you know, preventing heart disease.
And like, that's the active thought. So like you're thinking about heart disease. And, you know, you come across a shiny place on the wall, you know, and you're walking through the airport, and there's a compulsion in that moment to say that, almost like a ritual of saying, this is the thing I'm, like, almost like sending a prayer, like, this is the thing I'm going to do to ward off the bad juju.
Yeah.
I think it's an intent.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah, I find that really fascinating. Like because I've had obsessive thought patterns. Like that was the thing that I was given. And you know, sometimes it would manifest itself in ways where I would have to touch things a certain amount of times, or I had a compulsion that went along with the obsessive nature of things that had to do with cleanliness for a very long time. Where I could not have anything on my hands at all, ever. Not gloves, not dust, not lotion, heaven forbid, like not anything. I couldn't have anything on my hands. It would drive me insane. I thought, I don't even know what I thought, but it would drive me into a mania, to the point where I couldn't think straight. And so, I mean, one of the ways that I got through that was I decided to do what I now know is called immersion therapy, where I decided to go out in the yard and grab some dirt and then not wash my hands right away. And I felt fucking brave.
when I spent a period seeing a counselor that was... expertise was in OCD,
yeah,
and she had me do a lot of that stuff, and that is not touching something has ever been scarier than when you deal with that. It's bizarre.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I had a thing that I had to do with it, it was just a thumb on the inside of my right hand's ring finger, you know, just I just had to tap it. And if I was taking a walk, you know, there was a cadence that it had to have. All sorts of, you know, weird shit like that that, you know, on the outside, it doesn't look like I'm doing anything. But, you know, on the inside, if I stop doing it, I feel like there's a problem. And so that was definitely a thing that I couldn't really put a pin in it for myself. But it sounds like you had this idea, like, that you actually had found a focus for it. Like, you had found a way to take your OCD and put something useful into it. Like, you were giving it power in an unhealthy way, for sure, but at the same time, it was almost like giving yourself permission to feel better, like using something that was already working against you in the first place.
One of the most interesting, one of my more recent health worries was possible heart problems. I would have, my heart would be racing at rest. Mm-hmm. I could feel palpitations in my chest. And it took, at first, I ignored it because it was, you know, whatever. But when I started noticing week after week and it was reoccurring, you know, I started to fixate on it more, which in turn causes you to stress out more,
yeah,
which in turn causes you to have more heart palpitations. So, you yeah, know, I went through a specialist. I had several, you know, lots of tests done. Everything was fine. But it was that circular nature of finding a symptom, and I was probably stressed out about work or something else.
Sure.
And noticed the symptoms my body was showing because of the stress.
Yeah.
Stressing out about those symptoms, causing me to have more palpitations. And it's just this vicious circle of, you know, and it wasn't until I had all the tests done that my mind could rest at ease. You know, nothing's probably wrong with me.
Yeah. Huh. Man, that is really wild, because the so how tall are you?
I'm about 6'2".
Right. Okay. So, like, do you think that plays into it at all for you? Like, do you ever feel like, because you have to notice, man, I'm a little taller than everybody else. Tall people have problems.
Like, tall people do have problems.
Yeah. That's I imagine that's were you always a tall guy?
I've always been tall. Are you saying I should worry about my height? Is that gonna, is there another illness there I should, you know, let me check my phone.
Well, I mean, if you cared, you'd do something about it. But, you know, especially sitting next to a guy in a plane. I mean, you know, you give a guy some room. That's all I'm saying. But let's back up just a little bit. So it sounds like you've discovered that you know, you needed to go see doctors and get second opinions and things like that. When did you first discover that this even was obsessive compulsive?
You know, I think I worked at a summer camp once, or for 6 years I worked at a summer camp. But one of those summers, I saw somebody that was exhibiting some of the same behaviors I would do. She would touch things as she walked by them. And when I saw that, and I don't know maybe she just happened to touch them, or it had nothing to do with OCD. I have no idea. But I saw that and I recognized something that I do. And I never thought about it until then. I'd have to touch things when I walk by them, or else I worry about them. And up until that point, I don't think I really recognized what I was doing.
Yeah.
And so seeing somebody else exhibiting some similar behavior that made me aware of my own.
Huh. And that was, did you talk to your parents about that, or?
I never did. I thought for a long time I'd try to control it myself. Let me just, you know, it's not that bad. It's not really deep. You know, what's the word?
It's not debilitating.
I can't even say it. I'll skip that word.
It's not stopping me from being able to do things.
Yes. So I can get through my day pretty easily. And it was fine. I'll just ignore it, or I can stop any time almost. It's kind of like, you know, the alcoholic or the, you know, any addictive personality. I can stop at any time. It, you know, and it is kind of like an addiction because it does give you that instant It's a lot harder to not walk by and not touch it than it is just to go ahead and touch it and you don't have any of that stress. It is very similar, I think, to that addictive personality, just manifesting itself in a totally different manner. But so I always told myself, it's not that bad. I'll just ignore it. You know, and as years went by, it would get worse. And eventually I came to the determination. It's now becoming a problem.
Yeah.
I'm less productive. It's now stopping me from being able to do some of the things I want to do. So I went to go see a counselor and she helped me quite a bit. I got to the point that it was quite improved. And for another couple years or so, it was, you know, pretty well contained. And I think more worries, more health concerns, heart palpitations, things happen. And they slowly sink back into me. And I fall back into that trap. So,
Well, and do you find that, like, these things evolve, like, with you as you age? Because it seems like, I don't know how it is with your particular brand, but with the things that I've experienced, I noticed that there's the evolution of it is that once you figure it out and you solve the Rubik's Cube, you put it on the shelf and then you see something else and you go, wait, now what's that? Oh, damn it. It's another fucking Rubik's Cube. Like, it's very similar to the last one, but I don't quite have this one figured out yet. So, I mean, you have the general idea of what it is you're going to do for some coping mechanisms, but now there's brand new things that you hadn't really considered.
Yeah, no, new things do crop up all the time.
Yeah.
There are things, rituals that I've stopped doing throughout the years. And new ones have evolved from old rituals into something different. And a lot of times new ones will just start on the fly. I'll have some random thing happen that I touch something new in a different way, or I have to, you know, lift my one foot up for some reason, or some new thing will just on the spot, on the fly, I'll be inspired to do it. Yeah. And from that almost creates the precedent to next time do it again. And after several of those non-stressful or, after several non-consequential, like if I have a new ritual that I try and if I don't do it, there's not much mental consequences to it.
Yeah.
But after I've, for whatever reason, done it several times, I've built up a consequence then. And now I have to continue to do it.
So what is the driving process for wanting to make changes in this regard? Because there are certain types of behaviors that you can get away with without anybody calling you out on it, or even without it seeming to affect your life from an outside perspective. And, you know, again, they're allowed to just dig in and be what they are. You know, there's a certain level financially between, you know, a weirdo and an eccentric. And so I think a lot of people sort of straddle that line between weirdo and eccentric pretty well. And people just kind of let it be when they don't realize that in private moments, there might actually be something going on there that could be causing a problem. So, you know, in your case, like what did it look like for you? Something that was causing an issue enough that you said, I need to get some help with this because it's getting in the way.
I think, are you asking like what rituals or what,
well, like specifically, what kind of situation might arise that would make you realize that your rituals and your obsessive need to participate in these rituals is getting in the way of life?
Well, the nice thing about, I guess, my personality is I don't have a deep need for people to look at me normally, if that makes any sense. If people look at me weird, it doesn't bother me a whole lot. I don't have a high self-consciousness about that kind of thing. So if people look at me weird for doing something, it's like, whatever. What did spur me to try to control it better was the frustration of having to back, when I walk into a room, having to keep backing up and trying to go back through the room five or six times before I was successful.
Right.
And then I pick up whatever I went in that room to get, go back into the kitchen, and then realize I forgot something else, and that whole thing happens again. And just that annoyance, I think, was the main thing that eventually strove me to try for, to have better control.
Well, so I think that also there's a way of making, you know, lemonade out of lemons with some of this stuff. And, you know, it's as long as I've known you, you've seemed like a person who's meticulous, and you know, the OCD nature is harnessed and put into this service of making a thing or of doing something. The idea of it's going to help me keep track of things because I'm hyper aware and paying attention. So, I mean, you made a movie that I got to be in, you know, the early 2000s. And so I got to see a little bit of that firsthand. And I didn't think anything of it then. I'm certainly more interested in hearing what that was like now, because so many different people, so many different hands, you know, you're dealing with, makeup people in latex and chaos and things not showing up on time and things not going well. How did you think that this OCD was going to play with trying to make a movie?
Well, you know, one of my biggest concerns with getting help for it was a fear of losing some of my OCD tendencies that help me in doing creative work or organizing. Yeah. And I raised it up with my counselor the first time I talked to her that, do I have to give up everything? You know, I like a clean desk. I like to get, you know, I'll create a schedule and it'll be very meticulous, very organized, things that help me in my life. And right away she told me, you don't have to give up all the things. The things that are working for you, keep on doing those.
Yeah.
Use it to your advantage. Let's find ways for the negative things and fix those. You don't have to let go of everything.
Yeah.
You can actually hold on to it. So the great thing when I did Locked Away, the movie, when I did music videos, when I make TV commercials for my day job, whatever it is, I'm able to focus on those, utilize my meticulous nature to its full extent, and things go usually fairly well because of that. And then if a problem develops, keep my cool, think of it logically, organize, keep it organized and organize chaos. It all helps in the end. And fortunately I've learned that you don't have to give that up while trying to control the negative rituals.
Is this the only thing that you saw yourself as having an issue with? Like, I have a little bit of OCD. Other than that, I'm good.
As far as other issues that...
Sure. Because it seems like there's a handful of things at work in any human being at any given time. And when you take away one thing, other things start to become stronger in its wake. And so taking out bits and pieces can sometimes create other problems. And oftentimes one problem can exacerbate another. So with, you had mentioned that there was the hypochondria that went along with the OCD. How is the hypochondria these days?
I mean, you know, it's bad at times. my boyfriend will, he's been very supportive, and he's grown to understand it a lot better over the past few years. And before, he didn't know what. It's like, why are you worried about this? This is stupid. And it's like, and you get upset because it's like, this is not normal human, behavior. And it'd be like, but fairly recently made him realize how to deal with it and what it was. He read the book, I think it's Turtles All the Way Down, a new book by, I can't remember the author's name. He gave me a copy for Christmas. I haven't read it yet. But he read it, and the rituals that he had and the fears that he had, or the character that he wrote about, because the actual author has OCD. So he wrote a story about it, and it started to click in him, and he started to understand it. And then he looked at the whole thing very differently. Know that it's, it's not something I've got control over, or direct control over. And so he started to understand it a lot more. And that helped, that helped me to be able to not stress out about his reaction to my problems.
Right.
Because that in turn sometimes can cause, more stress or, more worries or something else to help you develop even more rituals to counterbalance that.
Well, and that's a rough one too. When you're a person who's got, kind of let's say a non-mainstream issue, it is a real issue. It's something that you really are feeling, even if it comes from a place of, behaviors that were nurtured when they shouldn't have been, or chemicals misfiring in the brain. You are still feeling these things. You are still really experiencing these things. They exist. They have weight. They're happening to you. And you present this to another person sometimes, and you might as well be telling them the fucking sky is purple. Like, and they're looking at you like, I don't know what to do with this. I mean, even if they believe you, it can be a difficult thing. I mean, especially when, you're dealing with your partner and, I'm telling her that I am having a problem right now, but no, I don't expect that it's real. And I do expect that I'm going to work through it and that it's going to pass. We'll be driving the car and I'll be there, suddenly the sky is completely black and I feel it come on like, oh yeah, there it is. Okay. Got it. Like that's how it manifests for me. And I recognize it and I just go, well, I guess we're living with this right now. So let's just see how that passes. But with your particular brand of stuff that you're dealing with, how easy is it for you to step away? Like when you're given the opportunity, that you've got to give in to the impulse, how easy is it for you to say, you know what, today I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to touch that. Like you're walking past something, you get the feeling like, this is the thing that I've got to touch. This is the doorway I've got to go through, and this is the number that I'm going to have luck with today. Like, are you aware of those things as they're happening? And do you ever pull yourself away from it just to test the boundaries?
Sure. I do. How often I do that? If today's the day I do that, or if today's not the day I do that, depends on what worries I currently have in my life. If there's some kind of possibility of, good or bad things, if, for instance, I'm up for a job promotion or there's some kind of good thing, today's not the day I feel like messing with, with that. If everything's fairly normal, then I'll be more likely to push it and to not touch the wall or, skip my rituals.
Yeah.
And one way that I do conquer my fears, because trying to control my hypochondria, makes it easier than to control my, OCD nature. So, like I'll tell my boyfriend, I have these symptoms today. you know, I'm a little concerned about it, but I realize it's probably nothing. Just me sharing that information, not keeping it all bottled up inside,
right,
releases a whole bunch of stress. It's kind of gets it out there, and I don't have to hold it here. And also, if he thinks it's something I should worry about, then he has an opportunity to tell me, ooh, that might be bad. Maybe you should go get that checked out. But right. If he's, you know, most likely he's going to be like, oh, okay, that's probably nothing, you know? And yeah. Then that tells me, okay, Jason, you're worrying about nothing. So
yeah,
those are the two kind of, well, those are the situations I can or cannot control it.
Right.
And what I do try to do it to ease my worries.
And does reaching out to him for validation help you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think earlier on, until he understood it better, he's like, why do you keep telling me I'm getting frustrated? Because I can't solve this for you. I was like, I'm not looking for you to solve it.
Right.
I'm just looking for you to call me an idiot.
That's a solution of sorts. It's like, that's definitely a solution that people can do. Like, if you're looking for someone to tell you you're an idiot, well.
Bring it on.
Yeah. So what are some other things that you do typically to get yourself through something? Like if you find yourself, getting stacked up on with hypochondria and the obsessive thoughts that maybe something's going to go sideways on you.
I a lot of times try to remove myself from an environment. For instance, there's a wall that I keep walking by that is starting to become a habit to touch that wall. Maybe I'll try to walk a different direction, a different way, so I'm not walking by that wall anymore. It's easier for me than to skip, you know, maybe a new hallway that I didn't go down before.
Uh-huh.
I don't have this recently established ritual down this hall.
Yeah.
So I'll more likely to walk through it, and if I avoid that wall for long enough, next time I go down it, I'm probably going to have less of an impulse to touch it.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, listen, I as we're wrapping up here, I just wanted to say that I've had a really good time. And your time's up. That'll be $80. And yeah, you know, I can turn my text messages off on my phone all I want, but if they're coming through the computer speakers, I can't do anything about it. So things are more or less, I mean, you've found a way to handle this and you've gone through some therapy, and you got a guy in your life who's understanding.
Yep.
And you sounds like you've got a pretty good understanding of yourself at this point.
Yeah. I know what I need to do, when I get overwhelmed with them, and I have the knowledge, and I have the tools, and I have the support. that helps a lot. And then it's just a matter of if I'm having a lot of symptoms of those wanting those rituals, mm-hmm. Taking the brave steps at that period to go against the grain, to avoid them, or to immerse myself in, you know, I'm going to walk by that wall and not touch it this time, and just being brave enough a few days and to do that.
Now, is that something that can build up over time? Like if you take a couple of days off, is that a thing that will allow you to reconnect with the reality beyond that situation for
sure.
Longer?
Sure. If I go a week without doing it, that next week is easier. I'm less obliged to follow through on that.
Yeah.
So it does get easier over time.
Well, that's good. And it looks like you got a handle on it.
I hope so.
You can stop thinking that you're going to get sick every 5 minutes.
Yes, exactly.
You probably come out all right.
Yeah, I think so. It's like, I wonder if you have a thermometer, if I could, you know, before I leave today, check my temperature.
Well, yeah, but don't put it in your mouth.
Okay.
It's good talking to you, Jason.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris.
Absolutely. All right. Another one in the books. Man, I just love that guy. He's
He's so genuine and sweet and wonderful and fun. Just a genuinely good dude. Be sure to go check out his movie, Locked Away. It is out there on Amazon Prime for free. So if you're one of those people that's got the Amazon Prime, go check out this movie for free. It's a great time. You can always check me out at randomify.com/pod. And don't forget to go to the Randomify store. Get yourself a t-shirt with Tim Rooney's face on it or a coffee mug. And that's all I got for this week. Don't kill yourself. I'll do the same.